I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Nick Corbin. I met Nick many years ago when Nick was fronting New Street Adventure, an absolutely amazing band, which we talk about on this podcast. Nick's been doing lots of solo material lately, which we talk about on this podcast, and we also discuss some amazing records. But before we get on with the chat, just a quick few thank yous. Thank you very much to Scroobius Pip and all of my brothers and sisters on the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to 76 for producing this podcast, and thank you to Yuzlot for really helping me grow this podcast, support it, and whenever you see it on the socials, you all seem to like, share, retweet, and do all the things that really, really help. And so, yeah, that's much appreciated. It's been a real fun labour of love doing this podcast. And all your support really does help. So if you can subscribe to this podcast or leave a review, these things really do help. And I know, you know, all the podcasts you listen to will generally say if you can do that. And the reason is that it really does help. And also if you enjoy this content and you want to hear more, then I do have a Patreon podcast as well, a Patreon page even, where I put up 4 radio shows every week, bespoke episodes just for Patreons, video episodes and such, and you can support that from as little as $1 a month. What's that? 80p. And it all goes in the pot and helps to kind of, you know, support the podcast and cover the production and all of that malarkey. Right, that's the kind of pleading poverty bit done. And also, if this is your first time listening and you enjoy my chat with Nick, then go and have a look in the archives, because if the sort of music and the scene that Nick's been involved with, then there's loads of people that I've interviewed on there that float around that scene, whether it be Eddie Piller, whether it be Steve Craddock, whether it be Emma Noble, The Milk, I'm trying to think who else. Mark Baxter, go and have a look. Mick Talbot of the Style Council, you can go and listen to all of them episodes, and also just go and have a rummage, because you'll see episodes with loads of your favourite actors, musicians, DJs, producers. Go and have a rummage and see what you can find. Better still, as I said, subscribe. Right, I'm done with all the intro spiel. Let's get on with today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Nick.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Joining me today via the means of Zoom, Nick Corbin. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Very good to be. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, it's good to be here. This is the new normal now, isn't it? Talking over Zoom.
have you found it? Have you found the whole thing professionally and personally, the last 6 months I'm talking about?
It's been like a sort of wave of kind of struggling with it and kind of making the most of it, I suppose. I've found it really interesting talking to other people about how it's affected them. And a lot of people seem to, I guess, have similar experiences because of, you know, the messages coming from the government and whatever are so kind of unclear and jumbled. I think when we first went into lockdown, I like really enjoyed it, because it just sort of felt like, we could just sort of down tools and relax for a bit. And then it kind of hit me that it was like really uncertain. You didn't know how much longer it was going to go on for. And then I had an album due to come out that I'd just finished. And I was thinking, oh God, like this just, is this going to be a waste of an album? No touring and stuff. And yeah, I think it's just, it's like a constant period of adjustment, isn't it, really?
I don't think you could put it any better than that. It is that constant. Because I think of readjusting, because you're getting, you know, the messages you get from a government that, you know, I probably wouldn't be too complimentary about. Like, you know, you're being pushed and pulled, you know. We're recording this on the week when the government are telling, you know, musicians and people in the arts to, that's all right, just go and retrain. And which possibly wasn't the most sympathetic thing to say to people that are freelancers and probably haven't earned any money for the last 6 months. but yeah, and it is. I totally agree, Nick, that it is that constant readjustment, because there's no. I think it would be a lot better if somebody said, "Well, look, come April the 1st next year, it'll all be fine, and it'll all be back to normal." That's the date when everything goes. Like, I think. Not that that's ever going to happen. You're going to get this date. But I think it's that uncertainty is what constitutes the constant readjustment, I think.
Definitely, right. Yeah. And I understand that they can't do that, but I just think it's... We always seem that one step behind, you know. It's reactive rather than... that. I don't think there's any leadership being shown. And you know... like you said, it's sort of pillar to post. Nobody really knows like how to, you know, what plans to make or anything like that. So I think that's what's been really difficult.
Yeah, definitely. Well, should we talk about the joy that is music?
Of course, yeah.
That's a constant. There's no uncertainty that stuff always delivers. Nick, the song would agree. I mean, I've seen your list already, and you've took the piss, and you've put loads in for every single one. So we've got some honourable mentions to work through as well today. The song would agree is the intro, mate.
Well, I was thinking with intros, I'd always go for like the sort of disco stuff. So like the Chic, Nile Rodgers, that kind of feel. I think all those tracks have got amazing intros.
Yeah.
And But then I went back to like my musical hero, which is Bobby Womack, and the song that was probably a big introduction to him as an artist, which was Across 110th Street, because I just think it's that period of music, like all the blaxploitation films, when all these amazing artists were writing the soundtracks. I just think that is like my favourite type of soul music. And so that song, really, I mean, there's a reason why it's soundtrack, like Jackie Brown, American Gangster as well. I think that would be my choice. I know I'd put down Thinking of You by Sister Sledge as well. I think, and there's the, is it Dimitri from Paris?
Oh man.
As well, which just like milks it, which I think is great. But yeah. I think if I had to pick one, it'd be Bobby Womack.
Yeah, I mean, the Dimitri from Paris, lost in music, isn't it? That is arguably one of the greatest intros ever, but it takes the piss. It's like, it's that good. They milk it for about 5 minutes before the song even starts. It's like, as a DJ, that's a cracker to have in the back pocket. But
yeah,
Bobby Womack. So are you talking about your love of that kind of era of soul music? Because so much of that stuff, and the same with like the Superfly soundtrack and things like that, it's very string laden as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think that song starts off with a kind of organ. I don't know if it's like a Wurlitzer, like with a load of delay on it. And then you've got the strings starting to come in, and he's got his like little falsetto intro. And yeah, it's not a long intro, but I think that's what's really genius about it, is that they kind of hint at what's to come with every single instrument. And then suddenly you're hitting this cool groove. I was a third brother of five. And it's just like chills down your spine every time you hear it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, Nick, we spoke before we press record that you've listened to a fair few of these now, and so you probably heard that I stutter and fall all over the place trying to get this question sounding correct. But I'm always interested how musicians approach intros from when they first started making music to how they make music now. Over the years, where we've seen the way that people listen to music very much change. That whole kind of, we'll start with a chorus, like hook 'em. Like, how has that impacted on you, and has it changed the way that you approach songwriting?
It has a bit, because you do hear a lot of get 'em straight away. You've got to hook 'em in the first 8 seconds or something like that, or 5 to 10 seconds or whatever. I don't think with any of my songwriting, I start with the intro. It'll be the chorus, and then a lot of the time the intro will sort of come last, or I'll sort of think, how am I going to make the first few seconds interesting? So like, I think it'd be difficult to go for a sort of Sister Sledge type intro now. Obviously it's really important, isn't it, to have something catchy. But I think it's like with, when I ever listen to, or I'm forced to listen to like Capital or Radio 1 or something, and you hear pop music now, songs are different, aren't they? It's just, they're not like songs as we know them anymore. It's like a collection of hooks.
They're a formula.
Yeah, they are. And so I think it's just changed, and like what is required from an intro is now different in this day and age. But it's difficult to pin down.
It is, and I guess, you mentioned sort of like pop stations there, that if you ever have to listen to those, then and I guess this question is targeted more at people that make commercial pop music. I suppose they're the ones that I guess have had to hone it a little bit more to keep up with the movements in how people make pop music now. But I do find it interesting. Someone mentioned the other day, I think they chose for this track, Bohemian Rhapsody. Now, although I'm not a huge Queen fan, I see the merits in what they do. And the fact that that's twice topped the pop charts for huge amounts of time. And, when we look at these records, these perfect pop moments that are like, 2.5 minutes, not an ounce of fat on the bone. It's just hook, 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 all the way through. Bohemian Rhapsody is just the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And I just find it really interesting that the way that we buy it as well now, and what we want from music, has changed so much. The fact that these records would never get on the radio now, they'd never get playlisted, anything that's got a bit of a journey in it. It's like, we ain't got time for that.
Exactly.
And I find a lot of stuff's going to get lost in that. And I think that's a shame. Okay. Track two. First song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, Nick?
So it is quite a cheesy one. And it's because my dad was always playing like old soul records. And when I was growing up, and it was quite a clear one to me, actually. There's a singer called Phyllis Hyman she was on like Philadelphia International, I think, for a bit, and did loads of cool disco stuff. But there's a song called Old Friend, which is really, it's quite cheesy. It's quite sad. And I have family in New Zealand, and my dad's sister lives over there, and she used to come over every couple of years. And I just remember one year I would have been about 10, maybe 9 or 10. And she left, and my whole family was like, we were always really upset when she went. And my dad put that on in the car as we were sort of driving away. And I just remember crying, and I just kept hearing that song whenever I thought of my auntie for the next few weeks, really. And I think that is that the first time when I've had songs that I love and I remembered before, but that's the one that really kind of hit me for some reason. But yeah. I listened to it again a couple of days ago, and I was like, it's actually about her getting back together with an old boyfriend or whatever. Yeah. But it was just that Old Friend. It just like a real sad song, you know.
Yeah. It's so weird that so many people, when they answer this, say, and then we put it on in the car. And
yeah,
it's so weird that the fact that I don't know. For me, so many of my early memories of songs and things were cassettes that were on in the car. It's like, yeah. Strange, isn't it? That was just so many people have referenced that it was, it was just, you know, my dad stuck it on in the car. I remember like vividly, and I can't hear it. I used to be a huge, huge Erasure fan in the sort of mid to late 80s. And whenever I got in like my dad's car, I'd put it on. I still think they've wrote some incredible pop songs, and sometimes used to come on, Sometimes by Erasure.
Yeah, yeah.
And I must have played it so much that my dad kind of got into it. And my dad used to sing Ooh Sunshine instead of Sometimes, and it made my shoulders shudder every time he done it. And I've never brought it up in front of him, but to this day, I can't hear Sometimes by Erasure without picturing my old man singing Sunshine instead of Sometimes.
It's funny that the misinterpretation of lyric thing, isn't it, as well? Like how we all, there are so many songs where you hear one thing, but they're actually saying another. Yep. But then even once you find that out, you kind of, you don't, it doesn't change how you feel about the song.
Yeah,
and I think it's the same with that Old Friend song. Even though it's maybe got a bit of a happy ending, I just still see it as like really sad. Yeah.
Track 3, song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Nick.
I think did I go for New Radicals here?
Yeah,
you get what you give. Yeah. Again, like we. So I lived about a 10-minute drive from my school, and we had a really rubbish car growing up. My mum had this old like, Fiat, and I think you could only get a couple of radio stations, and one of them was like, Southern FM, which was like, I was from Sussex. And they very rarely played music that I liked, but I remember New Radicals, You Get What You Give, was the one song where I just hoped that would come on every time. And just sort of every time I hear it now, I go back to just sitting in the car, or having the radio on in the morning in my room or whatever, and just hoping that song would come on. So I think, it just felt really cool. And it was a bit of a one-hit wonder as well, wasn't it, I think.
Do you know the story about him?
No. I don't know much about it.
I think that he's an absolutely incredible pop record. I just think, like, the intro's amazing. I just think it's brilliant. So he did not want to be a front man. He wanted to be a songwriter. Hence the video, he's got the hat pulled down.
Yeah, it's got like a bucket hat in it, yeah.
So he didn't want to be famous. And they put the album out, and he basically said, like, I don't want to do anything else. Told the label, I don't want to do this. And they said, look, you know, to write the album, you haven't got to, do any press. And so he wrote this album, and I hope I'm getting this right. But, and then they were like, right, we've got this tour booked in and you've got to go into it. And he was like, no, I've said I'm not doing that. And so basically at the time he faxed every single news, like music press, every single radio station, just telling them all to go fuck themselves. and systematically killed his career on purpose. And wow. Just basically finished it. And like he then become a songwriter. He wrote, if you ever listen to Love is a Roller Coaster by Ronan Keating,
yeah,
he wrote that. And when you hear it now, you go, of course he wrote that. He literally took the power back from the label and went, right, well, fuck you, this is how I'm going to end it. And literally nobody would touch him after that. And
wow.
He just self-sabotaged and done what he wanted to do, which was write songs for other artists.
Oh, good on him.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So school was in Sussex.
Yeah, place called Uckfield, so about half an hour from Brighton, and yeah, just sort of average town in Sussex, I suppose. Yeah,
big it up, average town.
Big it up, yeah. Do you know what? I've not really got many ties to it, but it was a really nice place to grow up because it was pretty safe. You had good links to London and Brighton as well. But my parents have moved away from there now. I've not got many reasons to go back there. There's a few mates' parents that live down there, which is nice occasionally. But
how did you find school?
It was all right, really. I've, as with all of us, like I went in and I'm always a big football fan, so I love football. And I was a bit of an all-rounder, really, like with everything. I was quite good at most subjects. I was quite good at sport, but not like brilliant at anything, really. It was all right. I was quite lucky, really. It was just like the local comp, but it was, yeah, it could have been a lot worse when you hear some people's stories.
Yeah.
I listened to Mark Baxter's episode and it sounded like he didn't have a good time at school.
No. Did you... I mean, was you aside from sort of academics and sport? I mean, you know, my introduction to you was obviously New Street Adventure. What about, you know, the creative side of you as a young lad? What was going on there?
Always sung a little bit, but then I think it wasn't until I was about like 14 that a few mates started playing in bands and stuff, and then one time the singer was like away in, I don't know, he was on holiday or something. And there was a school concert and I said, I'll do it. And the song was For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica.
Right. Yeah.
And I
can now see where New Adventure come from. Yeah. That figures.
Yeah. And I remember it was like the day before, so I didn't have the lyrics. I didn't memorize them. I had them on like a bit of paper in my hand, and I was fucking walking along the stage with it, like just I got quite a buzz out of doing it. And then after that, I started singing with mates, and then started writing songs with a guy who lived near me, who was a good mate, and. Yeah, I didn't start learning guitar till I was 18. And that was when I started like writing a bit more, and gradually like music just sort of moved up and like took me over. But it wasn't until I was like 21 that I started actually like playing properly. And yeah, so I got into it all quite late, really.
So in regards to fronting a metal band at school.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess being good at sport and things like that at school definitely kind of, I think, can get you through a lot of situations. You know, it can get you in with the people that, you know, are going to, you know, probably make life at school a lot easier than for some that, you know, are useless at sport, etc. But with, you know, with the confidence that come from being, you know, academic and good at sport, did that confidence carry itself over to thinking, well, I'm going to sing in this band. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, I can do this.
I think so. I think a little bit. But I was really worried about what people thought, because it would be like, I think when I sung that song, it was in like an assembly or something. So it was in front of the whole year. And I think maybe people were like a bit surprised, and But then, yeah, after that, I don't know. I never felt that nervous doing it, really. But yeah, it's a good point what you make about like the sporty side of thing, carrying people through school. Because I guess it can really help with that, because it's always the cool kids that are the best at football.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like that at all. Like I was sort of not shy, but not extroverted either. I was always sort of like in the middle of all the groups, I guess, and not, yeah, just unremarkable.
I think they're called in-betweeners.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was an in-betweener. So.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
I wanted to be a physiotherapist.
Specific?
For Norwich City Football Club. That's my team. That's... I wanted to be a football physio, I went to one of these schools where, like most of them, where they're like, oh, he's good at this and this, so we should send him to uni. And there was always like, I felt there was pressure to like pick a career and stuff, and like being a musician wasn't really anything, you know, to aspire to.
Yeah.
We didn't have, it was just like, maybe there was a few people that played music, but you didn't really see that as a career. So, yeah, strange, really.
Yeah. I don't think it is a career. I think you're meant to retrain now from...
I think you are.
What was the first record you remember buying?
Michael Jackson. So I remember my dad had Dangerous on vinyl. And when I was really young, I used to love that. And then I think the first time I bought a CD for myself, it was Off the Wall, just because I think it was the cheapest Michael Jackson album in the record shop I went to. So, yeah, I don't know what song it was for particularly, but my dad was like, oh, that's a good one. And it's the cheapest. So get that.
If you're going to talk disco intros, don't stop till you get enough taste of eating, don't it?
It does, yeah.
That's a call to the dance floor. That is,
yeah.
And what are your thoughts on because this comes up so many times when people reference the Smiths or Michael Jackson and things like that. And I'm always interested to know. Can you separate the, you know, the man from the music?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously really shocking, everything that came out, and that documentary that came, was it last year, the one with the families talking about it and stuff, and obviously it has put a bit of, it has tarnished his legacy, although we all kind of had an idea while he was alive of that stuff happening. I think it's really hard, isn't it? But I it's not like someone puts a Michael Jackson record on and I'm like, oh, get this off.
Yeah, yeah. I'm exactly the same, Nick. It's like, you know, I'm aware that, you know, a lot of the accusations, you know, could be true. You know, I really hope they're not. But, you know, like I say, I don't go out of my way to listen to Michael Jackson. But if it comes on, I still get joy from it because,
yeah,
the it's not just Michael Jackson that makes them records good. There's a whole... You know, there's Quincy Jones. There's so many people that are into making them records sound so great, and
you can't forget how that music made you feel when, because he's the biggest star of all time, isn't he? Really, like solo star. Well, maybe Elvis up there. You could argue a few, but really, he's the biggest.
Definitely.
And yeah, the music is so special, and the songs are incredible. Production. And it appealed. I just remember everyone liked Michael Jackson when we were younger. Just the coolest guy in the world.
Absolutely. And that Dangerous that you mentioned, when he passed, they put on, I think it was a Dangerous tour. I think it might have been in Japan or somewhere like that. It was the one that he released on video. And I watched it. And, you know, like everybody, I was a Michael Jackson fan. You can't not be. And I watched that live show and I just, thought, fuck me, he's got so many amazing records.
Yeah.
And his performance, now you just think, that's just that's everything you need from a night out right there. That's like, just the king of pop. You know, yeah. It's just a shame that that legacy has been tarnished with the accusations. But let's not dwell on that anyway. And can you remember where you bought Off the Wall?
Yeah, there was in Uckfield, there was these shops called Cranage Brothers, and one of them was a record shop, and then there was another one like two doors down that sold like hi-fi equipment and stuff. And so I would have bought it in one of them. But I never used to buy stuff there, but I think it was just because I went in with my dad. Yeah. I know it's been mentioned a lot on these, but I always used to buy my tapes from Woolies.
Yeah.
yeah, that's what we had. Yeah. So after that, I think I remember buying like, I probably bought like the Spice Girls when I was younger. And like, I remember, what's that song, Freed from Desire? Gala, is it Gala? That was one. And Men in Black, I remember they were like some, when I was maybe 10 or something, yeah. I would have bought them maybe. Yeah. But Michael Jackson, I would have been like 6 or 7, probably maybe 8. Yeah.
So as a, you know, we're both like, you know, your solo music, and with New Street Adventure, being signed, you signed to Acid Jazz as well, yeah?
Yeah,
And so being signed to, I guess Acid Jazz is an independent label, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Being signed to an indie, how important have record shops been to you, you know, as an artist?
Well, I think one of the best feelings I've ever had was when we put our first album out with New Street, and I went to HMV on Oxford Street and it was their new releases this week. And that felt fucking amazing.
Yeah.
'Cause I was just like, I've got a photo of it. And my wife took a picture. I think it's one of those that sort of, it like, puts everything, it boxes everything off, doesn't it? It's like, you've done an album, you've done this, and then there it is in the record shop and everyone can see it. And then all the smaller record shops as well, you know, I've always tried to send the stuff out to smaller shops when I can. And it's really important. And it's that's what's been really gutting about releasing an album over lockdown, is that the distributor that I have has put the records in, you know, it's been in Rough Trade and all these places online, and it takes all the gloss off it, doesn't it? If someone can't be flicking through the vinyls or whatever and think, oh, I'll have a listen to that, that looks interesting. They're so important. Amazing institutions, really.
Absolutely Let's move it forward a few years from school for track 5, Nick. The song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Well, I always hated clubbing. We had a club called the Broadway in Uckfield, which was just like, I mean, if you wanted to have a fight with a rugby player, it was the place to go, basically. And the music was awful. You mentioned Queen earlier. I hate Queen. I'm sorry to anyone listening that likes them. I'm not a fan. And it was
I was being nice earlier, Nick. Yeah. I don't like them at all.
I mean, I can respect that they did something completely different, but I hate the sound of their records. I've never liked it. And it was like every 4 songs would be like, Don't Stop Me Now, or I don't know, or The Summer of 69. That was another one that was always on at this club. But there was it was the only place that we had to go. And in about 2005-06, they started suddenly playing a bit of indie. So there'd be like 4 or 5 indie tracks. And one of them was I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor, Arctic Monkeys. And it was, I think it was that one song that for me started, then suddenly you'd hear like the Kooks, or you'd hear maybe like Kaiser Chiefs or the Killers or stuff. And me and my mates would be like waiting just for that sort of 15, 20 minutes of like indie, and the dance floor would clear and it'd just be us there and just hammered,
yeah.
You know.
Do you know what? It's so mad you say this, right? Because like... In my kind of when I was like 18, 19, there was a club in Grays where I live called, and wait for this, it was called Pizzazz, right? and they would just be playing commercial dance music, you know, Capital Radio stuff. And but in 1990, they then realised that there was this thing going on in Manchester. So it was like, right, okay, we'll play four songs. We'll play the Soup Dragons. We'll play Fool's Gold. We'll play Step On. And I think they might even have played like Unbelievable by EMF or I think it was All Together Now by The Farm, you know. And it was just absolutely introductory level, you know, Manchester indie.
Yeah.
But it was like everyone would fuck off and it'd be like, yes, this is our moment now. We can like sort of swagger around the dance floor pissed because just these four songs. And then the minute them four songs would finish, this was at the time when you'd get slow songs in clubs.
Right.
And it'd be brilliant because it like literally the end of like Fool's Gold would finish and then the lights would go down and then you'd hear... You can reach me by sailboat. And Alita Adams would come on and like all of these kind of guys wearing like sort of shirts and probably ties, some of them would like then just sort of descend upon the dance floor, you know, for a cuddle and a kind of grope of an ass with like, you know, you know, whatever girl was up for having a slow dance with me. It was tragic. But we got the four songs, mate. We got the four songs.
It's weird, isn't it? That I don't know, like... And then a couple of years later, then it would be maybe more than four songs. Maybe you'd get like a whole hour from or like half an hour or something. But yeah, strange. I remember going to we used to go to this club called The Event in Brighton. I think it became Oceana or something like that. And I remember I hadn't been for ages and they put I Bet You Look Good on the dance floor on and everyone just absolutely went mad just loving it. And then I think after that then they were just playing loads of indie. Weird, isn't it?
It is weird. And like, you know, for somebody that still, you know, not at the moment, but you know, runs a, you know, an alternative nightclub, it is strange that the 18-year-old kids come now and as much as there's such, you know, such a wave of really exciting music coming through now, for every one request I get for I don't know, Sleaford Mods, I will still get 10 requests for Arctic Monkeys or Mr. Brightside, you know.
And
it's weird that era of the K's, of the Kooks, the Killers, the Kaisers and all of that, like, just seemed to, just are stuck with us. And you know, and it's weird. You know, I'm always fascinated by how certain songs, you know, kind of get woven into the fabric and just find their way through. So, I mean, like I said, my sort of introduction to you was New Street Adventure, which is, you know, this is a compliment. You know, I see it and hear it as a very soulful side of music. And so was that kind of indie scene like key in you learning to sort of play and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Arctic Monkeys were the band where. I just finished school, so 2005, and then that was when I first sort of heard of them. And I had a mate who had his finger on the pulse with new bands a bit, and he made me a CD with some of their demos on and stuff. And I think as they become bigger and bigger, I remember seeing an interview in the NME with them, and they cited Curtis Mayfield as a big influence. I was like, oh, I know Curtis Mayfield. Like my dad's really into that sort of stuff. And before, I used to think soul music was for old people, like, because I loved it growing up. We used to hear like Stevie Wonder, Aretha Franklin in the car all the time. But then, as you're a teenager, you get your own taste, don't you? So I went through the like grunger phase, and then I went through the sort of R&B phase, and then indie. And then I think that comment, him saying Curtis Mayfield, that kind of got me onto the soul funk thing again. And after that, it was like, oh, Dad, you do know what you're talking about, and started finding all those records. And so, yeah, then it was always like, well, I'm going to sing in my own accent, but the songs are going to be like soul influenced, and it's always been sort of trying to find that balance and create, you know, use those old grooves and those old melodies, and and I think I'm still kind of, you know, I still don't think I've nailed it, but a couple of songs I've got close, I think.
Yeah, I'd say you have, mate. Definitely.
Yeah, no, it's good fun.
Okay, track six. Favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
So I got really close to home. So we, in my school, we had one real scary looking kid who was 2 years above me called Rory. And he, about 6 foot, I don't know, 6 foot four, 6 foot five, hung around with loads of scary looking guys. And I never knew him, never spoke to him. And when I left school, I played an acoustic night in our town, and he turned up with a guitar with this amazing bluesy voice. And we were like, fucking hell, I never heard him sing at school. And this guy is Rag and Bone Man. So he, who I think has made some great records and yeah, amazing voice. And I've chosen Ego off his first album. Well, is it? No, I don't think it is his first album. I think he had something else out before, but the album with Human on, like, his breakthrough album. There's a lot of soul influence there, but it's like super modern production. Vocals are brilliant and really good songs, I think. So
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. He listens to this podcast.
Oh, does he?
It's been the first time ever that somebody has kind of contacted me, like, and the label got in touch and said, like, would you be interested in having Rory on? And
oh wow,
because he's mentioned this podcast. So I was like, yes. So yeah, I'm recording with him soon. So
brilliant.
So yeah, I'll mention that gig. And
I'll tell him. Well, tell him I said hi. I mean, we don't know each other because we're in different years and stuff. I think he knows my sister a bit, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, lovely guy. And yeah, best of luck to him, because I know a couple of guys that are playing horns in his band, actually, because they played for New Street a couple of times. And yeah, great people.
Wonderful. Right, last track. And this is when you get to play DJ. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
So I've picked a band called Birdsworth, who they're from Woking, actually. And we've done a few gigs with them over the years, and they're just like really great lads and like disco sort of indie funk influence. That's a track called Mango. And they're just a really good band. They don't take themselves too seriously. They're like a bit silly on stage. In their videos, they're always like dressing up in weird costumes and stuff. But I think it's a really good track. So hopefully people give that a listen.
How did you discover them?
We were on the same bill with them at a gig in Guildford once. And then ever since then, like, they supported us a few times. And and we just kept in touch, just got on really well. Just like really, really good lads. And the lead singer, Jack, and Joe, the bass player, they both sort of share the lead vocals. So I got to know them quite well. And the other lads, Luke and Ed in the band, are really nice as well. And they have a percussionist who they call Dr. Flamango, and he wears this weird mask and he's got this big afro and loads of tattoos. But it's quite, yeah, the whole thing on stage is quite funny to look at, but they sound brilliant as well. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
So, well, we put all of your song choices and your honourable mentions and some of the other bits and pieces that we spoke about on a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast, Nick.
Great.
And so, looking forwards now, like, what are you looking forward to, hopefully, as we find ourselves coming out of lockdown, personally, and what have you got coming up professionally?
Well, I'm just about to announce two gigs, actually, in London at the Pizza Express venue in Holborn. So they're opening at, I think, like 60 capacity. So 25th and 26th of November, I'll be doing those with the band. And then my wife and I are actually starting a record label. So
really?
That's, yeah. So the aim is I've always wanted to write for other songs. I mean, for other artists, sorry. Not in the New Radicals way where I tell everyone who likes my solo stuff to fuck off. But
I mean, that's quite a statement.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone, Nick.
No, definitely not. But I love co-writing. I've just released a co-write today with a great singer called Hannah Elkins, called Paradise. That's not on the label, but that's another project that I've had going. But we just finished recording with Mitch, actually, from The Milk.
Yep.
A singer called Abby Farrell, and so two songs with her, and that's going to be the first release on the label. So we'll do that on vinyl.
What's the label called?
It's Big AC Records. Nice. So the Big AC was like one of my old bands. That was like our, you know, one of the favourite songs that we did. So I thought at least people might go, oh, Big AC, I'll make that connection, I suppose. So, yeah, the aim is just to write songs with artists that I like, that good sort of soul, funk, disco kind of tracks, and put them out and promote them ourselves, make it a bit kind of DIY, because I just think for now, like, no one knows when any live music's going to come out. It's a good time to be creative and like putting records out and kind of help people out as well. So they're all like up and coming artists who I believe like my fan base will latch on to as well. And so, yeah, that's the next big adventure, really.
Wonderful. It must be. Are you super hyped to play some live shows? Because it's the same for like DJing or like live podcasts. It's like we're recording this the day before. I've got a live podcast tomorrow for 50 people in Hoxton,
and it's brilliant.
And I'm just missing that connection.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Definitely. I did. I actually did a show in Brighton two weekends ago on the seafront. So it was, and we booked it really last minute. So we had like less than 3 weeks to promote the show, and it was all sort of socially distanced. The weather was good. It was really nice. It was weird because everyone was at the tables and they couldn't get up and dance and stuff, but it was just great playing again. So I think these Pizza Express shows, again, it will be seated, but they're quite nice little venues actually.
Yeah,
and it'll be, so two nights in a row, that'd be really nice, I think.
Yeah, wonderful. Best of luck with that.
Thanks, mate.
Nick, it's been an absolute joy. Thanks so much for your time today, mate. And best
really
of luck with the label.
I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, mate.
And yeah, and enjoy your live shows, man. Thank you. There you go, Nick Corbin. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. You know you've had a good podcast when you chat for 20 minutes before you press record, and you chat for 20 minutes once you've pressed stop. And I hope that, you know, that kind of warmth of conversation and connection does sort of come across in the, you know, for you listeners. I'm engrossed. So, you know, I just hope you get the joy listening as I do, having the chat. And it was a real joy to sit and chat with Nick. So, thanks ever so much for listening, and as mentioned at the beginning, thanks ever so much for supporting it. If you can go and subscribe, that really helps. You know, leave a comment on iTunes, and if you can help over on the Patreon page, that'd be amazing. You can find out about all of these things at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next week. Thanks loads. Bye bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music, and they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively, and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So, go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.